2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is your DFS Army Daily Dispatch brought to you by DFSArmy.com. And I am your host today, the one, the only, Boomer's Daddy. And joining me is not Mr. Bear. We want to send out our thoughts and prayers to him and his family and everybody in Northern California dealing with the wildfires. It is a call to the bullpen. Call to the bullpen for the middle relief, the specialty. The left-handed specialist, if you may. Chapadong. What up, Chap?
What's up, dude? You gave me middle relief.
Hey, dude, I can't call him the closer yet because, it's one of those things like you've got to we don't have a hammer today.
Like, at least give me setup guy because that's what I was called in here to do is set you up on this podcast.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. We could do that. Setup guy is probably more accurate than, you know, middle relief. So
I just want a bigger role around this place, dude. That's all. Just a bigger role.
So it's one of those things like, you know, we want to send out our thoughts and prayers, like I said, to Bear. He's dealing with some family issues and stuff, so gave him the day off. Family's more important than DFS, as much as you guys might not like it. We still have a lot of great content and a lot of great coaches helping us out. And today was going to be a strategy pod anyways, but it was going to be more of the moving from the beginner basics into more advanced stuff and how to kind of read and view situations. But since we can't do that, we're going to go back to the beginner's part, getting started. We still are really early at the beginning of the season, and it's something that we can definitely use and then refer back onto. It's been obviously a long time since I've been a newbie, so I kind of forget a lot of the stuff that I had to learn early on in my NBA DFS career. So, I taught Chop a lot of this stuff early on as well, but he spent last year meddling around with NHL, so he's forgotten probably a lot of what I've taught him. So we're going to relearn him today.
Awesome.
So
let's do it.
Sounds fun and good to go. So, all right, Chop.
You're right. You're right. Honestly, you really are. You're right. There's a lot of fundamental stuff. I don't watch the games. I don't follow NBA as closely as you guys do. And there's a ton that I've forgotten. It's coming back fairly quickly, but really and truly there's a lot more depth to NBA than just watching numbers and being, you know, a predictive sport and what it's still hard DFS sport. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm happy to help out.
Especially since the field's getting smarter and they're getting better. So that's always one thing that you kind of got to pay attention to. So Chop, the floor is yours, my man.
you just threw it right to me. That's cool. I'm trying to think of where we went years ago, and when I was dictating a lot of your strategy and your stuff, you taught me an awful lot about contrarian. I'm pretty much a chalk eating guy, which I believe in NBA helps set the foundation for cash games really, really well. My first question, I guess, to you would be, when are you looking to get off of the chalk? You know, like a key injury happens and some point guard's out and all of a sudden this other guy from the two slides over to the one and he's low priced and blah, blah, blah. What things trip your trigger that you're looking for that make it worth being contrarian in a certain spot?
Okay, so let's use an example from last night. Last night we had a situation where obviously Draymond Green was going to be out. And there are, with the way that the Warriors run their rotations, in a close game mindset. And one of the big things is obviously we don't predict blowouts, but it's the situation last night was with Draymond Green out. We had about three or four guys that could have legitimately seen a bump, and they all kind of did. Now, the situation was kind of weird and everything like that because of what happened, but you've got guys like there was the chalk play was going to be Jordan Bell. Alphonso McKinney was up there in ownership as well. Kevon Looney was a little bit cheaper priced on, I think, DraftKings than he was on FanDuel. And then you had Damian Jones, who should have got more run as well. Now, they all ended up playing. Oh, sorry. And then there was Jonas Drebko, who absolutely did nothing. But the minutes were still kind of, you know, right where we expected them to be. The problem with that was they were all around the same price, and they were all going to play around the same amount of minutes, minus Alphonso McKinney, who we had slated for about 28, and he only played 20. So they all played about 22 minutes and kind of like that. Now, the situation was weird because on DraftKings, Jordan Bell was actually, I believe, 3,800. And I'm looking here, 3,900. And then Kevon Looney was 3,500. So with in tournaments, with Jordan Bell being, we projected, chalkier, and then you could save $400 to get about the same, if not possibly more production, if Jordan Bell kind of stunk it up in a perfect situation, went in, got foul trouble, or, you know, just wasn't playing well or whatever like that. Kevon Looney was going to come in about a fraction of the ownership, and did. So we predicted that situation right there perfectly. This would be a situation where I would get off the chalk in tournaments, where there's a cheaper pivot that will see a bump as well, but people are flocking to the other guy for whatever reason, whether it be the usage rate says that he gets more usage with the guys off the court, or his minutes go up to a bump or whatever. Now, on FanDuel, it was exactly the opposite. Kevon Looney was 39 and Jordan Bell was 35. So there you would play. That's where I would end up splitting it, if that made sense.
Yeah, so you're going to go away from chalk that may or may not perform, chalk that everybody's flocking to that kind of still has some question marks surrounding it. And so I guess that would bring up the next question, which would be, when do you just eat it? Is that when there are no questions? It's like, this guy is just in a can't miss spot, so I just kind of have to suck it up here?
Yeah.
And how often do you do that? Because I know you – I mean, I swear to God, if I offered you chalk, you'd pick it up and throw it at me. You hate it. I know you do.
It depends. So today we have a situation where we've got Boston going into the back end of a back-to-back from Phoenix into Utah, and Kyrie Irving's not going to play. Normally this would allow us to kind of flock straight to Terry Rozier. However, FanDuel was very – they're very good. They've been very good at this. They priced him all the way up from $4,000 to $6,200 today. So it's not
I
that.
I saw that. I saw that already mentioned in our coaching channels today. That was pretty slick to be on that news that early.
Yes, yes, it was. Now, if you turn around and you go to, like, DraftKings, and I'm pulling it up right now, Terry Rozier is $4,900. So this is a guy that we've seen can put up 45. And you're telling me I can get 45 point upside for 40 for under 5K. I'm probably going to eat that chalk in a lot of lineups. Now, going into the back end of a back-to-back, going into Utah is never easy. Here's what I would say to that, though. He only played 21 minutes last night. You know, he's going to be called upon to play a lot more minutes tonight. And Utah's been playing at a faster pace. So I don't like the situation going into the Utah, but on DraftKings anyways, I would probably eat this chalk. the cheaper a guy is, you know.
Right, right, absolutely.
And depending on the situation, like when Dennis Schroeder ended up taking over the point guard duties for Russ, it was kind of weird because the Sites had the ability to kind of prepare for that. But when, say, like, if Russ was all of a sudden, or that's not even a good example. Let's use, let's use the Atlanta Hawks. Okay. With their situation, they have Jeremy Lin and they have Trae Young. Okay. Say Trae Young was ruled out today, like surprise, you know, his, you know, he tweaks his ankles in morning shoot around and, you know, something like that happens. Well, Jeremy Lin is $3,700, and this is a guy that we've seen can actually produce. Now, I don't need him to be putting up 65s. I don't need him to be putting up, you know, 55s. He can put up 35, and I'll be fine with it. That's about 10x, and I'm good to go. That's chalk I would probably eat all the way across the board. So, because I can get different elsewhere. It also has to deal with position scarcity. If I've got a very, very strong position and value opens up late in the day, then I might not want to eat that chalk because in NBA DFS, everybody loves to play the new value that just opened up, the new pivot. So early value ends up going a little bit lesser owned, typically more times than not, than the later value. Like if somebody's ruled out, if a point guard's ruled out, you know, an hour and 10 minutes to lock, he's going to see a more drastic increase in ownership than if somebody's ruled out earlier in the day at the same position.
So do you tend to hold the line on that early guy instead of flip-flop over to the shiny new toy?
Yeah, exactly. It's what we call shiny new toy syndrome.
Is that a situation like a couple of nights ago where Bertrand's was the chalk and then all of a sudden that other crap opened up and everybody flew over wherever, like Sexton or somebody like that, and then Bertrand's went off and Sexton ended up being my drop score on FanDuel?
Yes. Was I
chasing the shiny new toy? Was I re-solidifying my rookie status by completely chasing Sexton off the board with all of my lineups and ended up regretting it, burning myself and kicking my dog because I didn't play Bertrand's, who was in my lineup to begin with?
I would have said that you made a good decision, but you didn't make the right decision. I had Colin Sexton in a couple lineups as well. And in cash, I don't mind that decision. You know, cash, head-to-heads, ladders, stuff like that. Stuff that you play, I don't mind it at all. But in tournaments, I went straight to Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood.
Ooh. Okay, now here – okay, now see, there were two questions that I had that were following up. One was more of, you know, the shiny new toy syndrome, which we just handled. The second one, we'll talk more about rotations and stuff like that. But you just said pivoting off completely away from Sexton and Bertrand's and whatnot and then going over to a Jordan Clarkson – how can you tell somebody who doesn't necessarily know the players in the league, somebody who is a quote unquote rookie or a beginner, how do they get educated to that degree, which leads to what the actual next question is, which is where do people learn the rotations? Where do they learn how that stuff pivots and how that stuff works? Because I know there are no numbers that tell me that. There are coaches inside, you know, like DFS Army that tell me that, but there are not numbers and things that I can watch. Is this where you're going to go into your old mantra where I absolutely have to watch the games?
Yeah, if you don't, I'm really big because I had to learn how to do it, but I'm really, really big about watching the games without worrying about my lineups. The only time I start to worry about them is if I have a sweat going on in the back end of the hammer game.
That's not easy, dude.
It's not. It really isn't. But I also, when there's 10 games on a slate, I also can't watch 10 games at a time and pick up everything I want to. So I'll usually pick one or two. I'll pick two usually if the Thunder aren't playing. If the Thunder are playing, I'll watch the Thunder, and then I'll go back and I'll rewatch the coach's film on the rest of the games. And so I have basketball going almost all the time. And I watch rotations. I watch, you know, who handles the ball. And some of these things you can pick up from a lot of the numbers. There's a great site out there called Popcorn Machine that'll help you with the rotations. Who comes in for who and what they do when they come in. You can see who's on the court, who starts, who closes the game, stuff like that.
Will that show me, and maybe there's another tool out there somewhere else for free. I can't remember the name of it, and I certainly wouldn't be giving it out anyway right now, but that will kind of tell you usage bumps. Because I see these guys like you and Donuts and, you know, Keg and Puggle and Bear and Luce and all of our other coaches, you know, guys I'm probably even leaving out, that will say, oh, so-and-so's minutes spiked from 23 to 27 and usage spikes from 16.9% to 21.3% or whatever. Where are you guys finding that stuff? Is that the popcorn site you just mentioned?
NBA Wowie is a good one.
Okay, are they still functional? I thought that site went defunct.
No, they went to – they got bought out by another site. I forgot who it was. But if you just go to NBA Wowie, you can also use StatMuse and, you know – There's a couple other sites out there that have these tools where you can look on and off the courts and stuff like that. And that's great to know. And it's a good base to have. It doesn't always play out that way. But if you, and normally when it doesn't, that's when like myself or Bear or Luce will come in and we'll say, hey, this is what these are what the numbers show. But this is what we think is probably going to happen instead because, you know, when you – a lot of these numbers show – okay, so it'll show that Schroeder and Paul George, they receive a usage bump with Russell Westbrook off the court. Well, Russell Westbrook is a high usage guard, so we're kind of looking at that situation going, well, no crap, right? When he's not on the court, the usage has to go somewhere. But right. You know, in some of these situations, when you take him out of the rotation completely for a game, it changes a little bit. Like, you start to see Steven Adams with more usage. You start to see Jeremy Grant with more usage. Obviously, you also get the spike with George and Schroeder, but you see other guys pick up more usage than if he was in the rotation as well. So, like, tonight, Kyrie Irving's off the court. Yes, that's automatically going to have Terry Rozier. But you can also look at guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who, as we remember, when Kyrie was off the court last year, these guys were taking a lot of shots and commanding a lot of usage as well. So that's where knowing how some of these guys kind of work their rotations and knowing it, how to watch the game with guys on and off the court kind of helps you out a little bit. And we try to, like, between me, Bear, and Luz, we watch more basketball than probably the rest of the Army put together. It's just we love the game, we know the game, and we know how to watch it without becoming emotional in analyzing it. So it's not easy to learn. It really isn't.
Well, that's why we lean on you guys as coaches in the Army, which is great. But how important is it in, you know, matchup situations? Because if you take somebody like a Russell Westbrook off the court who has just enormous usage, and that opens up an absolute ton of usage to be spread around. Now, yeah, usually it may fall on this guy or it may fall on that guy. But are there game scenarios where a certain matchup is all of a sudden weak and it might go to a Paul George, but tonight it's instead going to go this way because that we're targeting a certain defense or we're targeting a way a team plays. How important is that in NBA and how do you know maybe when that scenario arises?
I think it's really important because different defense or different teams play defense different ways. So we'll take this for instance last night. I was kind of off Dennis Schroeder. the usage was going to be there. He finished with a 25% usage rate. Still took 12 shots, shot 50% from the field, but he was going to be a distributor yesterday. Why? Because it's very hard to get shots off of James or off of Chris Paul. He's kind of a pest and stuff like that. The issue with that is that, you know, in today's NBA, there are teams right now that basically switch on everything. So, right. Like, last night you saw Chris Paul not only on Schroeder, but you saw him on, at times, Paul George, but you also saw him on Steven Adams at times. And then when you switch, it causes mismatches. There are some teams that don't switch as much. So knowing kind of who's good at switching and who doesn't is very, very key. So like last night, like the Oklahoma City Thunder right now, without Andre Robertson on the court, they switch basically everything. They switch a lot. So that causes matchups that are defensively better for the Thunder. And at times, if the offense recognizes it soon enough, it gets them out of it as well. And that's what kind of opened up a little bit for Clint Capela last night at certain points. Now the game got out of hand. These guys weren't able to reach their ceiling. We understand that. But Clint Capela was actually having a very, very good game. And you wouldn't think that going against one of the better defensive centers in the league in Steven Adams.
Now, didn't I see James Harden also switch off and defend Adams a couple of times?
Yep, absolutely.
Because I remember watching the game. I was in and out because I was following other Army stuff behind the scenes, and I'm watching the game with one eye, and they cut away to Shaq and those guys on TV, and it absolutely cracked me up because Shaq said something to the effect of, you got to love it when teams switch because when they put a little guy on a big guy, that big guy can just take his time. And yeah, I was like, exactly. Yeah.
And then you saw a couple times when that little guy was on Adams, the help defender came over to double team, and Adams he's not Nikola Jokic passing out of the post, but he's very capable of passing the ball out of the post. And it showed last night because he had – how many assists did he have? He had 4 assists last night, you know, which isn't always Steven Adams' game. I mean, his is blocks, rebounds, right. Putbacks, right. Working off the pick and roll with George and Adam or George and Westbrook. So,
but by watching the games, of course, we can learn to pick up on that, but we have to just soak up a ton of time in doing so. So for people that are in more of a hurry or more efficient, then they either need a source they can ask, you know, like you or some of those guys, or they need a site like an NBA Wowie or a StatMuse that they can plug in those numbers. And then they can start to decipher some of that by seeing whose usage jumps when so-and-so is missing and whatnot. That's essentially what you're saying, right?
Yes. I mean, I've said this before and I want to take it to kind of the next level here. It's very, very easy to get caught up in falling in love with fantasy points per minute and usage rates with these tools.
Sounds like another shiny new toy.
It's just
in a different way.
It's very easy to fall in love with them because it takes when a guy's on the court and off the court. But I have to stress that a lot of these times it's not always that's counting when a guy's out of the rotation and when a guy's just in the rotation, just not on the court. So, and sometimes with certain teams and certain situations, that can be very, very, very deceiving. So, it's not always deceiving, but there are certain times and certain situations it can be.
Okay. That makes sense. At least to me, it does. Hopefully it makes sense to everybody else. Another question you mentioned a while back that is, interesting to me. You mentioned how one guy's more advantageous on FanDuel, another guy on DraftKings, so you would split your exposure and get one here and one there. But a lot of people, newer players, you know, I know I personally have gone down to one site. I just don't have the time to study the nuances of both sites anymore and kind of pay attention to it. And I think that's a big mistake that a lot of newer guys make, is they try to automatically jump in and I got to play on FanDuel and I got to play on DraftKings and I got to play on Fantasy Draft and I got to play on Yahoo and all these other things. At what point is it overkill? And would you recommend to a newer guy learn one site first, or would you recommend playing both sites in a lighter amount? Or when you do switch from one site to two sites, at what point in somebody's, you know, experience level would you recommend they go ahead and start picking up that second site?
Absolutely. 100% one site to start out. Learn it, live it, love it. Okay. So what I kind of attest a lot of this to is, you know, kind of if you think back to, you know, you were a freshman in high school and you didn't know a lot, and then you progressed into a senior and you knew more, but you didn't know as much as like a college freshman. And like, there's different levels and you work your way up. Okay. And starting out being new, you have to, whichever site you end up liking, or that you have focused on more, stick to that, play that, learn that. And then, you know, like get used to it. And then after some time, say you give it a month, 45 days, or you do it for 2 months, you know, if you don't like it, then maybe go to the other site and start messing with that one. If you've never done NBA before, or you don't know how to do mass CSV edits, or you're not comfortable with, say you have $100 on DraftKings but $500 on FanDuel, and a late scratch happens and you're not comfortable with letting that $100 on DraftKings go because you don't have time to pivot both of the sites, then stick to one site. Now, That's
actually a good point, because if I had 500 on one and 100 on the other, I'd be crapping my drawers over $600, when really you should forego the 100 to focus on the 500. That is actually a really good point.
Right. Give yourself a shot with the most money that you have, you know, because yes, you might. Now, if it's a player versus player, like if it's a, oh, this guy's out and I have you have a pivot that's close, and you're doing one lineup and you could just global swap, that's different. I'm talking about like if you've got multiple lineups but you're playing a higher volume on one site. Focus on the site that you have the most money. Once you get that done, then go to the other site. Mm-hmm. Because
right, if you have time left.
Yeah, if you have time left, because you have a better shot at basically making up for the money that you lost on the other site with the one that you have the more money invested into. Now, what I will say is this, is when you learn to manage two sites, when starting it out, and Keg kind of took the words right out of my mouth that I'm about to kind of regurgitate, that I've been doing, that he says that he does. He alternates every day which site, and you can tell that by the sheet he puts out on dfsarmy.com. He'll go from DraftKings to FanDuel to DraftKings to FanDuel. So depending on what he puts out on his sheet, that's where he's playing the most volume. He'll usually only do one lineup on the other site at very, very minimal volume. So if something happens, he knows that he can make a quick pivot and then he can focus on his cash for the night, his big site. Like if he's got the $500 on FanDuel, he'll make the quick pivot on DraftKings and then go to the other one. So he's playing one lineup, and that's one thing. Like with me, I'm playing a lot of tiers on DraftKings along with you know, my head-to-heads on both sites, but I play more tournaments on FanDuel when I'm playing them. I'm not playing them a lot right now because I don't play a lot of tournaments, of high volume of tournaments, compared to what I normally will later on until Thanksgiving. I try to build that up, especially knowing I'm going to be chasing Qs this season. But it's like I'll have the DS pulled up for my tiers, and then I'll have my exposures in there. And all I have to do, say, if I don't even know who's in the tiers yet because I haven't set that up yet. But say Ben Simmons is, or say Blake Griffin is ruled out for Detroit at 7:30. Okay. And he's not, and it's like 30 minutes before lock. And I have a ton of Blake Griffin on both sites. I will take him out of the tiers, run that DS, upload it real quick so I'm live before messing with any exposures. I will just unclick his name and go. And of course, this is all after I do the DS updates, because that's obviously taking first priority. And Kevin, just to let you know, if you're listening to this, if I ever lose $1,500 in a night because I have to update the DS first and I don't get to update my lineups, I expect to see that on my next paycheck. He's probably not listening to this, and it would never hold circuit, but I had to throw that out there.
I'd rather you just follow the code to dfsarmy.com, use code CHOP, and sign up through my link. I'll repair that $1,500 for you.
No kidding. So after I update the DS, I will do that first. Knowing I never try to manage something or get myself into something I can't manage. Now, sometimes it does happen still. I'm still getting used to,
In the future, you could let me know when those nights will be. That'd be awesome.
no kidding. Well, it happened just on Wednesday night. Like, the FanDuel put out a 10 or a $4.44 10 entry max tournament that,
That's why I lost.
and I expected to basically not cash at all in any of those lineups, like, because I wasn't planning on playing that. So I played that over my normal volume, but I added more head-to-heads to make up for it. But if I lost every single lineup, then I knew I was fine with that. But what ended up happening was some late news came out. I forgot what it was. I had to update the DS. I had to run my cash lineup again. Or it was George Hill. I think it was the George Hill news. And then it was the Goran Dragic news. So it kind of had a couple things happen in succession, and that usually takes a little bit longer. But I had to update my cash game lineup. But I forgot that tiers started 30 minutes later on DK, and I was messing around with tiers, and then I got my FanDuel cash lineup set up, and then I was messing around with my tournament lineups and didn't get them fully done before lock.
You're killing me, dude. I'm laughing because I'm going to start a hashtag right now. Hashtag blame Keith. Every time I lose from here on out, I'm going to, with late news pivoting, I'm going to be like, blame Keith
But
out
see,
on
here's.
Twitter because you screwed up my DS and you screwed up my
No, 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 no.
lineups
But see, here's the thing, is if I would have remembered, and this was my fault, it was my fault. If I would have remembered that tears started 30 minutes later that day, I wouldn't have spent 20 minutes trying to get tiers exposures
Yeah.
taken care of, and I would have been able to spend time on that. So.
That's what this goes back to, though, is managing your time well, whether you have Domination Station as a priority or whether you are a guy trying to play FanDuel or DraftKings, where in my case, a lot of times basketball versus hockey. I mean, hockey starts a little later, so I can panic last minute with hockey and worry about my lineups after basketball locks. But for that first, 60 minutes or so up to lock in NBA, it is so critical that you pay attention. That's the beginner's tip that I would tell people is you absolutely have to be glued to your computer for that hour or so, because once stuff happens, sometimes it's so critical that it destroys everything you've been working on all day long. And it unravels in seconds.
Yeah,
And you
I
have to be
mean.
able to, on the fly, switch. And that's why, to me, as a guy who doesn't follow NBA religiously, it makes a ton of sense for me to sit back and know that you're back there messing with the optimizer. I've got other coaches breaking down the news saying, hey, this just happened. You pivot to this. This guy's usage just went up. This guy's usage just went away. This guy, whatever. Or in some cases, this guy's usage went up, but it still isn't enough to make me like him over somebody I already had in my lineup. That's the fun stuff of NBA, when I know that all I need to do is wait another 5-10 minutes or so. I can go rerun the domination station, get the new projections in there, see how that shakes things out, and then I've already got my contest reserved. I can go in and I can make my edits and make my pivots, because that's already happened 3 or 4 times in the past, say, 2 weeks.
See,
where stuff unravels and I was able to keep pace. And that's strictly, as a new guy, as a newer player, that is strictly because I have access to those coaches and those guys that are in those rooms doing that 60 minutes before lock.
So let's put this, let's give this as an example. Okay. In our breaking news chat room, which, okay, I'm going to set this up kind of a little bit. Okay. First off, if you can't be by a computer watching our breaking news chat room and our coaches' news chat room, not the NBA general talk, like not where everybody's in there chit-chatting, I would get, are some of our most successful members do not partake in anything after, like, say, 4 p.m. Central, 2 hours closest to lock. They are glued to that NBA breaking news channel and the coaches' channels, because they know that's where they're going to get their pivots. If you can't do that, one or two lineups. Okay. But
if you even play,
right. If you're going to be at dinner and your wife's going to get mad at you for scrolling through our chat rooms leading up to lock, don't play. Like, we're in November. NBA will be here tomorrow. It'll be here on Saturday. It'll be here, you know, next week. We have all sorts of time for NBA, okay? So let's take this as an example. The other night, we had the George Hill news broke that caught us by shock, because he was actually a guy that me and Bear had talked about in the podcast that morning. And so when the starting point guard went out, everybody pivoted to Colin Sexton. Now, it happened late enough that Colin Sexton in my tournament was still only 17% owned. He was in higher tournaments, he was higher owned, obviously, but that's a different news. And that news hit, I'm looking at a little bit after 5, okay? And what I said in the chat at this time was, George Hill is a late scratch. This means that J.R. Smith becomes more of an option and Colin Smith is going to become another value at point guard. And then 5 minutes later, after I got done running the DS and running my model as far as the minutes, with George Hill news as well, it looks like Jordan Clarkson received a huge bump in the domination station, okay? Which takes in all these things into account. I said, I don't mind this in tournaments at all. We've seen his ability to knock down shots, and he will go overlooked. Rodney Hood hit a 33 or hit 22 at $5,100. Not great, but he was 3%. Could have been more. However, when we go and we look at it, as I go to try to find his ownership, Jordan Clarkson was 5% owned at 4,700 and put up a 33.8. So while everybody flocked to the immediate Colin Sexton, who was cheap, okay, Jordan Clarkson was actually the better play there. So sometimes when you're thinking about these things, wait till the DS gets updated. It only takes about 8 minutes. 8 to 10 minutes, and then rerun it and run it and see who starts popping from that situation.
How would you do that?
run your same lineups, but you press the refresh projections button underneath your player pool. Because if you filter it to say like 20 points as your minimum, and then all of a sudden like something happens, like George Hill came out, Jordan Clarkson, they all got bumps, but Jordan Clarkson got a massive bump, and then automatically he was popping in all of the lineups because you haven't edited his exposure. So before you edit his exposure, it's set at like 100%.
Okay, so in other words, before you edit any exposures based on your previous settings, when news like that happens, just refresh projections and click
right.
Optimize again and see what changes and see how much it changes.
Yep.
And then if you don't like that, or then if it's not making sense, maybe kind of tweak some stuff and move some stuff back around. But most importantly, run it first with the new changes so that you can actually see what the new changes are.
Yes.
Okay, that's the kind of stuff that helps. When you say that these guys, you know, pop and all that kind of stuff, because I mean, I think a lot of people would look at the optimizer and go, "Oh my God, it just totally changed around." That's okay. I mean, in a lot of cases, that's why it's better to get that information at 5:30 at night than it is at 10:30 in the morning,
right?
Because stuff changed, and the industry is going to do that. If you've ever been caught in a situation where you can't keep up with that that news or whatever breaking, and you come home at night and it's 8 o'clock and you look at your lineups and go, dude, I thought I was on the chalk. How the hell did everybody use this guy? Well, that's why. The industry is smart these days. The industry pivots quick. We're not the only, you know, site out there. We're the only ones doing the real-time coaching that I know of in the efficient manner in which we do it. But, I mean, there's a lot of sites out there that update their projections and do that kind of stuff. It's just a matter of getting the explanation as to why it is going to help you, or if this makes sense, or maybe that happened, but ooh, that might not quite make sense tonight. It's those little bitty things that make the difference that honestly set us apart from anybody in existence, in my opinion.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things like I try to stress is, you know, if you're new, absorb. Like, we'll help you. Sometimes it's, you know, the best time to ask questions obviously is not when news is breaking 20 minutes before lock and, you know, right, I'm updating right. The DS and trying to work on my lineups and everything like that. That's not the best time usually, but right. You know,
And it sucks if that's the only time you have as a yes. guy who just got home from work, and we understand that, we know, and we try to be as patient as we can be, but there's so much stuff flying around all the time that, I mean, we're human beings too, and sometimes it looks like we're not as compassionate or as understanding as we are, but we really are. We
understand this. And you know this because we've been friends now for 3 years, ever since we started working together, but, right. You know, when I first started working here, obviously my wife was pregnant and we didn't have Cam. So I didn't have to worry about a kid. And then I had, you know, obviously he stayed home with me, baby dues and everything like that. But now he goes to daycare in the afternoons and he's there through lock. So I can be more focused. Not that it matters to anybody, but like, this is what I do. Like, I am glued to a computer from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time without any distractions and doing this. And I try to help out as much as I possibly can, but understand that my priority is making sure that it's not even my own personal lineups, because I've ate money before
sure.
to make sure that the DS is updated. That's my priority.
I'm still using hashtag blame Keith, dude. I'm still doing it.
Oh, you can blame me for all you want. Now, whether or not I admit it or take responsibility,
it doesn't matter. You don't have to. Hey, let me ask you a few other rapid fire questions. I don't know what your time looks like, but I can get a few more questions out here pretty quickly that we don't need to probably elaborate on too much. Other than, of course, the first one. Everybody pays a ton of attention to matchups and DVP and that kind of stuff. How much emphasis do you put on DVP, and then explain your ADVP as well, so that people can understand the difference between the two?
Okay, so regular DVP that you're going to see at a lot of sites is basically going to go by fantasy points allowed per position. So, like, if a team is allowing, you know, 50 fantasy points a game to a point guard, then it's going to show as a bad ADVP or a bad DVP. I pay zero attention to DVPs set up that way, which is, as far as I know, 90% of the industry, maybe even more. Okay.
90% of the industry does not pay attention to it pay attention to it.
It puts, that's what they use as their DVP.
So in other words, they put, in your opinion, too much emphasis on that.
No, that what I'm saying is like, the DVP that people use and see, like the DVP that you see on DraftKings, where it has the opponent rank, quote unquote, mm-hmm. that's fantasy points allowed by the position that
you're facing. And you're saying everybody uses that as opposed to ADVP.
Right.
Okay.
I pay attention to the ADVP because I know, and just to give everybody an example today, I know that. Oh, come on. There's no rain in Oklahoma. Hurry up.
What?
My internet's running slow. So, and normally that happens.
Rain affects your internet?
Oh, come on. We know this. I've been cut off because it's been pouring rain outside before. Okay. So,
brother, I'm just making you admit it to the nation. That's
all. Oh, yeah. Dude, it's crazy.
Just letting everybody know you live in the sticks and you got dial-up still.
I don't, though. I live in Oklahoma, but I pay $100 a month for internet to make sure that I can do everything that I do in a quick and efficient manner. Okay,
airplanes fly right over your state, dude. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so just to give everybody an example. Brooklyn. Okay, their ADVP to point guards would be a 1.252. That in of itself is the best matchup on the slate today. Okay. But if I go down against small forwards and power forwards, it's not quite as good. They're actually negative matchups. And what ADVP does is it takes the quality of the opponent into consideration when adjusting and making these numbers. And it only takes guys that are it only takes stats from matchups of 21 minutes or over. So if a guy comes out, like Curry played, what, 19 minutes last night? He played 26. Okay, so that wouldn't have been a good example, but I'll kind of use it. But Curry got hurt. And say he only would have played 19 minutes. His stats would not have gone or even counted against or for Milwaukee's point guard situation because he didn't play enough. So it takes out the role players that maybe go bonkers in 10 minutes and put up, you know, 18 fantasy points. So like Boban going against guys, I'm not taking into consideration anything that Boban does because he doesn't play enough minutes. Okay. It also takes the quality of the opponent into factor because now I can see how teams work defensively. To give you an example, okay, Orlando is actually really, really good against the small forward, but they kind of are not good against everybody else. Well, that's probably because Evan Fournier guards a little bit more of the small forward, or because small forwards, they haven't faced a good quality opponent yet.
That's often the case in NFL.
Exactly.
Because we've got such small sample sizes through week 5, through week 6, week 7, that you – it's like, I hadn't really faced a tight end yet. So, of course, they look dominant against tight ends. So, you're saying that has the same sort of
– It has the same sort of effect. It takes quality of opponent.
In, Yeah, it shows up in ADVP. It doesn't show up in DVP as much as shows up in ADVP, which gives you a little bit more insight into how a team actually defends a certain position or which position demolishes another team.
Right. So it takes significant players into account. It doesn't take the insignificant ones into account.
Then can you answer this question? In your estimation, which position on an NBA roster is the most stable or the most secure in terms of, I mean, we know in quarterback in football touches the ball on every play. His floor and ceiling is usually pretty close together. They don't vary as wildly as, say, a tight end. We know in baseball, pitchers are more consistent. We know in hockey, goalies are a little bit more consistent. Is there one of those in NBA?
I would say point guards, and more specifically, your upper echelon point guards, your guys that command, because point guards in today's NBA are not like they were 10 or 15 years ago, where they were distributors. You know, they're not floor generals. A floor general is what I would call like a Rajon Rondo. He's very, very good at basketball. He knows, he's very savvy. He, in my opinion, would make a great head coach if he could ever curb the attitude, but he's very, very basketball smart, but he has, his jumper sucks. It's like that, but he gets a lot of his points from commanding the floor, and he elevates the game of everybody else. A lot of point guards in today's NBA are not like that. You have guys like Russell Westbrook who are huge and fast scores. Off the dribble and scores. Then you have guys like Curry that can like absolutely just become lights out from beyond the arc. They still contribute in other aspects, but they command a very, very high usage. So overall, to bottom, I would say point guards are more consistent. But
is that the link? Is you say upper echelon point guards? Is the link usage? So not only are they a point guard, but they got very, very high usage. That would tell me that they're probably very, very stable in as far as very high floor type players.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So. Like key stats that I you would look at, guys that have command a high usage and take a lot of shots, and also add peripheral stats, rebounds, okay. Assists, stuff sure. like that. You know, before this year, I didn't like paying for DeMar DeRozan because he was more scoring dependent. Now he's pretty much doubled his assist totals from his career because of the situation changing, and he's adding more rebounds, so this makes him more valuable in my aspect. I want guys that if their shot's not falling, can still produce in other ways and still affect the game in other ways.
Sure. That gives them more ways to score points for you and help you out. So which would be the least stable or the most volatile position then? Would it be center or would it be something like shooting guard?
Shooting
probably
guard.
Probably team dependent.
It is team dependent. If we go top to bottom, I would say shooting guard because a lot of those guys, you know, minus the James Harden, the Victor Oladipo, which are de facto point guards and stuff like that, mm-hmm. They're catch and shoot guys. You know, Clay's like that. We see that. Clay can go off and hit 51, but he can also, you know, go 3 for 12 from the field and end up with a 15. You know, JJ Redick's like that.
Okay. So players that don't have peripherals, basically.
Right. They don't add quite as much in the peripheral. They're more scoring dependent. You know, small forwards, unless you're a dominant high-end type of guy, they can kind of get phased out at times. You know, guys like I'm trying to look here.
I'm sure. I guess what I'm hearing is it's not necessarily position dependent outside of maybe point guard being stable.
Right.
There's no tight end or defense of NBA, which is just like you can just count on that position being wildly volatile because it depends more on the player or the team as opposed to the position.
Right. Exactly.
So. What about how much do you stack in NBA? So if the point guards throw to the center can get rebounds and, you know, and can catch the pass and you can get the points for the assist. But is that 1.2 or 1.5 or whatever an assist is worth? Is that really all that important, stacking with a center or a power forward?
I like it because usually, you know, we've talked a lot, you know, when we first started talking, me and you, about like ownership groupings. Like one guy might be chalk, but, you know, that's where – you know, we go and we say, okay, chalk if one guy's chalk, who can I find to pair him with that isn't chalk that he could possibly work off of? That's why, you know, you used to hear me and Al talk a lot about ping ponging back and forth. If like Russ and if Golden State and Oklahoma City are playing, ping ponging Russ and Curry, or if, you know, Dame's playing at home and he's playing somebody, ping ponging the two primary ball handlers, to where if the game's close and becomes a higher scoring affair, you know, these two are going to have the ball in their hands and they're going to work off of one each other. As far as like single team stacking and correlation, centers and guys that set a lot of picks and work really well together off the pick and roll. Before last year, Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond were a big one of those. You know, Steven Adams and Russell Westbrook are a huge one. It used to be Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan are a big one. Mm-hmm. Obviously they're not with the same team anymore, but you know, those were guys that worked really well.
Is there anybody this year that you see that does the same, that kind of is the same way? I mean, is there anybody you're keying on this year that, I mean, you'd be willing to share with people? I mean, sometimes there is, sometimes there's not. It's not, I shouldn't have said that you'd be willing to share, but I mean,
Steven Adams works really well with both Paul George and Russell Westbrook. I don't need to pair Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid together. They do run a little bit of pick and rolls and stuff like that. Damian Lillard and Yusef Nurkic they run a lot of pick and rolls. Okay. They work really, really well together. Now, if they're connecting on that night, that's a different story, but they do help each other out a lot. Used to be Jeff Teague and Karl Anthony Towns, you know, last year, but that whole situation is a mess on itself. It's just, we're not far enough into the season quite yet for me to make that determination of, okay, these guys work really well together and it's going to stick.
But nobody's popping right now as like when they appear on a slate, you just kind of want to run to those two guys. And if I play one, I'm going to play the other one with him usually because it's going to work out.
Right. I usually will pair a lot of Steven Adams exposure with Russ or George because I do know that they work well together. Same goes for like Rudy Gobert and Ricky Rubio. But guys like Joel Embiid, I can play solo. Guys like Nikola Vucevic, okay, I can play solo. So okay.
Another rookie question for you. How much do you depend on Vegas at the beginning of your research process? How much are you looking at high total games? How much are you looking at maybe implied total or somebody running implied to score more than their average points per game? How much does that kind of catch your eye in the beginning of your process?
Okay, so I look at implied point totals for the team over anything. I don't care about spreads. I don't predict blowouts because if I did, then I would suck because I told Bear yesterday that with the way that Oklahoma City schedule has been all of the month of November, not being in one city more than 12 to 24 hours, I know they just played a home game on Monday, but then they turned around and went to Cleveland, then turned right around on the back end of a back-to-back and had to come back home, and now they're going to be in Dallas tomorrow. So there was not a home stand. So I honestly literally told him, I was like, we don't stand a chance tonight. I thought we were going to get blown out, not blow them out. So I don't predict blowouts. Like today...
I know the reason why you don't, but tell people, new people, why. The reason I always heard, you know, I know you just kind of answered it, but the reason that I always heard you say was because if the game's going to blow out, it had to get there somehow. And it got there by these guys getting their points.
Right. And a lot of times that's true. Now we did get full Paul George last night, but that's only because we watched Boston come back from an 18-point deficit at halftime and end up winning the game earlier this season. We saw Boston come back again last night and absolutely just, they took the game to overtime, but they won again. But like Denver and Brooklyn tonight, it's, Denver doesn't play as well on the road. I don't think that they're going to blow them out. If you're really good at predicting blowouts, you might be a little bit over 50%. But why am I going to miss out on a guy that has like a 60-point ceiling just because I'm afraid that that's going to blow out, when if it doesn't blow out, I'm going to miss that and I'm going to lose because of that. If you went about trying to predict blowouts, you would never play Steph, Clay, or Durant, or Draymond, because there's a legit shot that every single night when they're healthy, they can go blow the team out. So you would never play Golden State guys. And I can't leave that amount of upside out there. And I used to do it, and I was hurt more by, I was burned more by not playing the guys than I have been playing the guys.
Makes sense to me. That's why I wanted to have you explain it to Felix. So I hear echo. We don't predict blowouts. Now people kind of maybe have a better understanding of why. And obviously you focus on high total games where you can't implied totals, like you said. Do you focus on pace? Like when you see indicators that a team is supposed to get an extra 4 or 5 possessions on the night, on the slate, that's going to be one of the teams that gets affected the most. But is 4 or 5 possessions really a lot?
Yeah, I do look at pace differential. That's one of the things that obviously it takes account in the DS and the projections. If you've got Memphis going into Golden State, then obviously the Memphis guys are priced as if they were playing at the same pace. So you add a couple more possessions, it's going to add a little bit more potential value to them.
How much?
It depends on exactly how big the differential is. If you've got, so right now, we've got Atlanta playing at the fastest pace. So if we've got Memphis going into Atlanta, because I always think that pace favors the home team. Okay. If we've got Memphis going into Atlanta, obviously Atlanta's going to be hurt a little bit, not probably enough to shy me away because of how they work their rotations, but it's going to be, they are going to be hurt, but Memphis is going to get that bump because of that. Because of that big pace differential. And that pace differential is over 10 possessions per game right now.
Wow.
So Atlanta's playing at the fastest pace in the NBA, and Memphis is playing at the slowest. So that's the extreme, obviously, extreme case. But to give you an idea, it's over 10 possessions per game right now.
Which would be obviously significant. I just always see it split up. It's like all 10 possessions aren't necessarily going. So is that more of a game number or is that a team number that you're looking at in that differential?
That's a team number.
So somebody tonight is up 10 possessions per game?
Okay. You know, so we'll take Atlanta. Atlanta is playing at the fastest pace. Detroit is actually – where are they? Detroit is tied for 13th, okay? There is a 5.2 differential in pace. So what I would probably say is, since Atlanta is the home team, you could decrease their pace by probably only about 35 to 40% and add the 60% pace to Detroit. So if we take that, the projected pace for Detroit would be 106.
Okay,
which is up more than the 104 that they're playing at.
Gotcha. Okay, that's kind of but that's only what? That's what, 106 and 104? That's 2.
Right.
How big of a deal is that to the players? I mean, it's 2 possessions.
I mean, that could be an increase of 1 to 2 fantasy points.
Per player, or maybe 6 for one player and somebody else just didn't get lucky enough to benefit much.
Right. I'd have to look at the math, but like a league average team for fantasy probably puts up right around 3.5 to 5 points per possession. Okay. So that's a league average, you know, because you've got the assist and the bucket.
And possibly a rebound, I guess. There's other things in there. Or the other team a block or whatever. So surely that factors in and says, okay, so if the difference is 2, that amounts to about 7 fantasy points extra for somebody on the team.
Or, you know, you go to
a division of players.
Right. And so say you've got Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond. So say you go, you know, 2 points to Griffin, 1 to Drummond, and then you split like a half to the rest of the guys on the team.
This, essentially where I'm trying to go with that, and this is honestly sort of a personal question, so I apologize if it's boring for people, but it's something that I've kind of struggled with. How much does it actually play? And I know it plays in, I know it makes sense, I know it there's a factor involved, but it's not going, and I never thought this, but it's not going to take Blake Griffin's projection of say 39, 42 points and make him like a 50. Or a 60. It's not going to be, oh my God, they're paced up 3 possessions. Blake is going to smash tonight and you have to own him. It's not going to. So we have to kind of keep our expectations a little bit more realistic in that, okay, instead of 39, he might get us 43 points or something like that. It's not going to be something where he's just going to all of a sudden post 80 points. I mean, if he does that, it's not because he was paced up. It's because he had one hell of a night.
Right, exactly. So,
which you can do in a paced up situation, it would lead to the frequency of that happening being a little bit more often than usual, but it's still an outlier performance of his personally.
Right. So say like Blake Griffin's baseline projection, usually in a neutral matchup, playing 35 minutes at his pace, is right around the 43.5, 43.75. With the positive ADVP and the up in pace, currently right now, at 35 minutes, we have him at a 46.17.
Oh, there you go.
So we take the baseline, we add in the ADVP, which is a positive, and then we add in the pace, and you know it goes more in depth, but that's kind of how it works.
Awesome, because I think that's important for people to know. Not only that, but how much it affects. Always, I think it probably falls on deaf ears when we say temper expectations. I mean, don't go deposit $25 and think you're going to win $1 million tomorrow. But at the same, you know, you want to grind it up responsibly. And if you get lucky along the way, good for you. But generally speaking, your main goal as a newer player is let's never redeposit again. You know, let's, I don't care if it turns into 30, 40, 50 bucks over a month or two. Let's just never redeposit.
Right.
Same thing with projections on players, which is, hey, this guy's not going to go from 40 points to 75 because, you know, some other guy didn't show up to play basketball tonight. His projection's going to go from 40 to 45.
Right,
which,
exactly.
When we're talking about pricing, because again, it all comes back into how do you explain this? Because I didn't understand this as a newer player. There's a channel of points that a guy's going to score, and it runs from – say, you know, 0 points to 100 points in somebody like Anthony Davis's case, but 60% of the time he's going to fall within, you know, 40 and 65 points or something like that. However, 20% of the time he's going to score under those 40 points, and 20% of the time he's going to score over those 65 points. It's that channel of what usually is going to happen that we're predicting or that we are projecting. And that channel slides instead of from 45 to 60. It may go tonight because the matchup is that good. It may go from, say, 50 to 70.
Right.
And that's what slides. It's not, oh, my God, he scored 82 points tonight. Okay. Nobody knew that. We knew that he was in a better position to score. We knew that 20% of the time he was going to score over 70 points was maybe more possible tonight. It might happen instead of 20% of the time. Maybe he scores on the high side of that range 25% of the time. But it's still going to operate largely within that channel. And what the newer player needs to understand is when you're predicting that channel and when you're playing fantasy sports and you're trying to line up all of those guys, they're all in that channel and shit's still going to happen, both good and bad for you. If I look at the slate tonight and I had all the right plays and all of the guys that had high channels that they're running in and all increased chances of hitting their ceiling numbers and everything, I can still fail because even though I did it right, it's still a channel of points and there's still a 20% chance that this player isn't even going to hit that. And that tilts people and that upsets people. And it happens sometimes three nights, four nights, five nights out of a bad week where you're just like, holy crap, I couldn't hit water if I fell out of a boat tonight. Guess what? That happens. That's why you have a bankroll. That's why you play within your means. That's why you study and you play the appropriate contests for the money that you are using. And that's how you become a long-term profitable player, not by digging into whether or not the guy changed his shoelaces today. That's not what's going to matter. What matters is how you apply the money that you, and with realistic expectations and an understanding of what we're trying to do. If we ran this slate 100 times, what is typically going to happen? Who is typically going to score the points? Who is typically going to have nights that supersede their pricing on the sites? That's what we're banking on. And does it happen every night? No. But if we ran that slate 100 times, generally we're going to come out ahead.
Yep.
So that would be my big beginner's tip, is just getting the mind right, putting yourself in the right contest, surrounding yourself with the people that are knowledgeable, that can echo this stuff to you as many times as you need it echoed to you, and are willing to actually dig in, talk to you, and help you get to become a better player. And that's what we honestly focus on. And I know this is a commercial for DFSArmy.com, but that's, I wouldn't be saying this stuff if I didn't wholeheartedly believe it. I wouldn't be in the coaching channels 24/7. I wouldn't have practically changed careers because of it. I wouldn't be trumpeting this from a mountaintop like it was the cure for cancer if I didn't honestly believe that we are absolutely the best at what we do.
Yep, absolutely.
So probably a good spot to wrap because I got to eat lunch, dude.
Yeah, I got some stuff to do around the house so as well.
This is fun, dude. We haven't done this for a long time. This was fun.
Yep, I agree.
Good stuff.
I love it. So, all right, guys, that's going to do it for us today. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, that's going to do it for us today for me, for Chop, for the DFS Army. Hope you got a lot out of this today. But we go.
Yeah, my one takeaway, #blame Keith.
Oh, God. All right, guys. We'll see you later. Catch it.